CliffCentral.com. Yeah. Good morning, everybody. Monday morning, the 23rd of May. It's pretty much the last week of May. I mean, yeah, we got 2 days of it next week. But, I mean, this weekend, for many people, Friday is payday, which is a welcome thing. Even if everyone's putting their rates up and everything's costing more and I'm not going to start the morning with that shit, I promise you. I hope you're off to a good start wherever you are in the world this cold morning. It's cold in Johannesburg and Pretoria, I can tell you that much. So, struggling to get out of bed when it's freezing. I don't know how these people who do it, like Ben, for example, who we have on the show now on Fridays again. I'm really happy he's back. But he wakes up and has a cold shower every morning. Now, in summer, yeah, I could probably do that. I wouldn't even try. You will not. Wild horses could not drag me into a cold shower in a winter's morning. I'm sorry. I don't think that is a good way to wake up. I think it's quite possibly the worst way to wake up that is imaginable. So I hope you're off to a good start this morning. Hope you've got a busy and exciting week ahead. We've got lots of things coming up on the show today, which I think you're going to like. Among other things, we're going to speak to an old friend of CliffCentral.com, Aspasia Karas, who Aspasia used to do a show here with us as well. And she prominently writes for several very, very important publications in South Africa, including Times Live. She wrote an absolutely brilliant article about Albert and Charlene, you know, prisoner Charlene. And we're going to talk to her with Dr. Hanan later on, which I think will be a lot of fun. Hey, Leanne Moll, what's happening?
Hi there.
Hi, good morning. How was your weekend?
How's things?
Things is good, eh? Yeah, it's great. How was your weekend?
Oh, it was cool. I had that
birthday.
Second birthday.
Yeah. Yes. How did it go?
It was actually so nice to be outside and not wearing masks and having fun and being, I mean, the weather was a little bit strange.
It was horrible.
We had like four seasons in one day.
Yeah.
But when it was sunny, it was good. Nice seeing people living and thriving and breeding. But
are you seriously, are you only getting back into that now? I mean.
No, I only really see all of these people together when it's the kids' birthdays, which is a year apart.
Okay. All right. Okay. Gotcha.
I'm talking like long, long tables, multiple families.
Nice.
Nice. Yeah. So that was cool. Good.
Awesome. Yeah. I feel like I haven't really had a weekend. You know, we have those weekends where you plan to do very little, you end up doing a lot. Friday.
And then it's gone.
Geez, Friday ended up being like quite a hectic and busy day. And then Saturday, out of the blue, I did a bunch of things. I went to a friend for lunch. There were about five of us there and it was very, very cool. And, sort of just tried to stay indoors and keep warm. Really that was like the priority. But I kept thinking about these people in KZN who've now had to put up with more floods.
Oh my God, it's actually heartbreaking.
You know, first of all, I've got friends who live in Umhlanga and they Umhlanga, you know. They've just had the shittiest time. So they had flooding in their place. I mean they didn't have their house wash away or slide down a mountain like some people did, but they basically, you know, their garage flooded. They had they were walking in water that was, you know, ankle deep at least, and they had to replace a whole bunch of stuff, and there's some stuff that they're just never going to be able to replace, and you have to deal with rotting wood and all that shit. That was the first ones. Then, of course, if you cast your mind back a little bit further, they also had to put up with those riots where there were basically food shortages, mm-hmm. and they couldn't get, you know, bottled water or drinking water, forget about bottled water. And then, like, they think it was arson, but somebody burnt down a part of that walkway. They've just built this beautiful walkway through the forest in that little nature reserve, which is right on the beach, in front of the breakers, basically. And there were like flames coming from this thing. This is now, what, 3-4 weeks ago? And then these floods this weekend. And I'm like, you know, this... this place is a little piece of paradise. Like, KZN is beautiful, and particularly along the coastline. You know, you've got people who've gone there to retire. You've got people who've wanted a change of lifestyle and scenery, and maybe they've got kids, and they wanted to go and give their kids a kind of a different way of growing up to what they might have in a city or a town. And they live, you know, not too far from the sea, maybe. And part of it is that you just want things to work. You know, it's kind of frustrating when water pipes, electricity, all the basic infrastructure that you need is just not there. And I feel really, really sorry for people. I'm not just saying this as a part of the show, like I feel I have to. I was thinking about them all weekend.
Yeah, it's the kind of place you go to be left alone and just to do your thing undisturbed, you know. It's almost a place to be, to forget about everything else. It's a real escapism. And yet they've had all of these things encroaching on their lifestyles.
Right. And it's like the wrath of God is laser focused on like KZN. It's just so unfair.
Yeah. You know. Really unfair. And, you know, as you mentioned, there are homes falling down into the sea, basically. But there are so many more that are just slightly damaged, like you mentioned, where it hasn't been destroyed entirely, but it's just a complete mess.
Look, all I can say is use that old Afrikaans word, fussbait, because, I mean, you know. And it's also, it doesn't help that now things are getting colder, and you do not want to be sitting with problems like that in the cold. Anyway, a couple of people here commenting on the cold showers. I said, I don't know how people do that, especially in winter. But Woody says, I got kidnapped on Friday afternoon for a whole weekend birthday party. Oh, I feel sorry for you. You're going to need another weekend after your weekend. DK says, gee, you would have died in the SADF and not in the combat. Brr. Is that from the cold showers? Ugh. Oh, my God. Yeah. I'm not going to mess around here. I am a pussy when it comes to, like, cold showers and shit like that. I mean, I could probably do it, you know, if that was all there was, because to be dirty would be worse for me than to be cold. Because you're cold, you can get over. You can always climb under blankets or wrap yourself in a towel or put on warm clothes. But cold shower just because? No. I don't see the point. I don't see the point of torturing yourself like that. I really don't. And even if it gets the blood flow going and shit, like, you know what I'd rather do? I'd rather go and do like a sauna and then a cold shower at the gym and then back into the sauna. That to me seems more reasonable, because that'll get your circulation going, and it's not so fucking awful.
I went to a health hydro, which it's known to be one of the more militant types.
Like
the guy who runs it is this fruitarian.
Oh, yeah.
And you can see he's starving all the time. His eyes are just like hungry animals.
Yeah.
And he walks around barefoot with minimal clothing on. And you for 3 days, you drink only water. You don't have food at all.
Yeah.
And then for another 2 days, you eat just pawpaw. and you have to do these cycles of exercise, massage, hot and cold. You do about 6 of those a day. So those include being stood in a corner and hosed down with a freezing cold hose pipe. It was absolute torture. My mum and I went together. It was supposed to be this like nice getaway to plan for the girls to plan the wedding.
Yes.
We took wedding books and all sorts of things. We were not interested in dresses or anything. Even the buffalo's poop looked exciting on our walks. I was tempted to eat it.
You were just hungry the whole time, right?
Hungry. Cycles are meant to kickstart everything.
It's so funny. If any of our ancestors heard that we were paying to go to a place where they wouldn't let us eat, and, you know, they would say, what has happened? Where did evolution sort of climb off this biological train that everyone else has been on for thousands and thousands of years? You're paying someone to not feed you? It's insane.
Everyone's tried so hard to get us to a point of luxury as human beings, and then we go and destroy it.
Right.
in this stupid thing.
Well, there are a bunch of things to talk about this morning. I mentioned Dr. Hanan this morning will be speaking to Aspasia about an article she wrote about prisoner Charlene and Prince Albert of Monaco, because that's a hell of a story. Apparently, he is paying her 169 million rand a year just to stay in the marriage and keep up appearances. And you know what? I mean, what I love about it is that she titles the article, "There's No Romance Without Finance." And I wonder how many people can relate to that. Because when we talk to Dr. Hanan later, I want to ask him, you know, we've often hinted at the fact that a lot of relationships break down because of money. So does that mean?
No, absolutely.
Does that mean if you've got lots of money that you can keep the relationship going past its sell-by date? I mean, that's clearly what's going on there. But
I mean, that's on a huge scale when you're talking millions. But if you look at small scale, there's so many women who cannot leave the relationship because they won't have a means to live.
Yeah.
Being kind of forced into a situation where they're not working or they're getting really low wages and they can't leave the marriage, else they won't have food.
Right. Well, exactly. And that's like hard reality hitting you in the face, right? That's the problem that some people are dealing with. Anyway, I think it's going to be another chilly week, so we better prepare for that. And if you have any like little weekend experiences that could serve as tips for the rest of us as to how to keep warm and what to do over the weekend if you want to entertain yourself in the cold, let us know. A friend of mine does these board game nights where they make a fire and you drink red wine and you play board games. Now, when they say board games, I've only ever played like Monopoly and Cluedo and Risk and those obvious board games, but they talk about these games which are like very involved. And one of the people who does all that stuff is Rich Mulholland, who we'll actually be talking to this week as well. There are thousands of these board games. We're also going to talk to a friend of mine in New York who's invented a lockdown board game where you basically play the game as someone going through the pandemic, and it'll revive and remind you of some wild and weird and wacky things we've done in the last 2 years that we've never done
before. Not too soon.
I don't know. I think it's brilliant. So we'll be talking to him. He's in New York City, and he's been working on this for a while. Smart guy, and it's just, I think it's going to make a lot of people laugh. So all of that's coming up. We also, because it's Monday, have Collectomania later on, which is going to be really nice. And this morning, we're going to talk to a bonsai collector. I mean, it's not really a collecting thing as much as it is an art. But, you know, the best artists, in this case, the best bonsai, what would you even call them? Bonsai fanatics, experts, aficionados, those people are also collectors because then, you know, they try to find the best seeds if they're planting from seed. They try to find the best little trees. They try to find the best pots. They try to find everything that makes it complicated. Mm. And
can't have only one.
No, and the more complicated, the better. And I mean, if you see what some of these cost, if you want to buy a little bonsai tree, I mean, it's wild what you know what people can charge for these things. So we'll get to that in a little while. And there's plenty more where that came from. So it's time for Leanne to start us off this morning with a little quiz, or rather a bunch of questions and statements that may just help you to figure out if you've actually got good table manners. Because we often talk about this on the show. And, you know, I was thinking that if South Africans, there's a gap in the market, a huge gap, for people who need to learn the soft skills in life. I'm not talking about, you know, having to learn how to do basic numeracy, literacy, all those things which we sorely need. You know, we're a country that doesn't do those things well. But the soft skills are just as important. Let's say you are starting out in business and you get invited to a very fancy dinner with a whole lot of other business people. And you're sitting there and you don't actually know how to use the cutlery and the crockery and the glassware and all that shit on your table. And for some people, it's so intimidating. And it can help, it can make or break you. Because It used to be sort of in the 1700s and 1800s in France and England in particular, but also in Germany, that these things were a way of separating the people into classes. So if you didn't know how to which wine to drink with which course, if you didn't know how to eat, how to hold your knife and fork properly. These are like telltale signs that people would use to separate you into, oh, well, that person's obviously middle class, working class, or upper class. And it's still used these days. I mean, it's not for social...
People will judge you.
It's not for social class stratification, because I don't think that really matters anymore. Not to very many people anyway, and it shouldn't. But it is helpful if you know what you're doing in a business environment. You know, you could be invited to some quite fancy things, and if you don't know how to behave, it can be very, very scary. So table manners, my dad was always a stickler for this stuff.
Oh, me too.
We were not allowed to eat at the table with them until we could eat properly with a knife and fork.
Yeah.
And God help you if you turned your fork over to like shovel stuff into your mouth, or if you took butter straight out of the butter dish and put it straight onto your bread or anything like that. It was just boom, smack, out of the way. You're not eating with us tonight. So, and his mother was, I mean, my grandmother was apparently even more. She was fine with us because we were grandchildren. When my dad was young, it was like, it's like the Gestapo when she served dinner. So what have you got for us? Give us some idea of what actually goes on here.
Well, I mean, we were speaking recently about whether it's acceptable to go out in a tracksuit or not.
Yeah.
and we spoke about how it's become fashionable and we're probably too staid in our ways, and things have changed and become more casual.
Mm-hmm.
Those things we need to take into account as well. I mean, we don't have to be absolutely perfect.
No.
But people, it is one area of etiquette where people will judge you.
Yes, definitely.
Whether you like it or not. And if they're not judging, they might just be offended if you're slopping burger all over your face it might just be a bit gross to watch.
Yeah.
So, I mean, beyond the knives and forks, the other basic things, and I've seen a lot of people are kind of letting this fly lately, is talking with your mouth full.
People do that, and children obviously do that, and then they're taught not to, but some kids just never, ever learn, and then they grow up to be adults who do that. No one wants to see the food inside your mouth while you are masticating.
No. So the polite way is to, if someone asks you a question while you're eating, then you cover your mouth with your fingers just to indicate that you're still chewing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I can see you. Instead of going, I can't answer now because my mouth's full.
I can see you doing that. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that's is that not obvious? Do people not know that?
Well, we're starting with the basics here, hey?
Okay.
You never know.
All right. Let's do it.
And also, if I may highlight, this expert points out, who's written this article, that they had Americans in mind.
Oh, okay.
We've watched movies. We've seen how Americans are at the table. It's not great.
No. And again, we're generalizing, but there are Americans and Americans.
Yeah,
we're talking about somewhere in the middle.
So you might have seen, I've seen it before in movies where, not movies, but like reality shows, where the person cuts all of their food at one time, and then they just use a fork to kind of lean on their elbow and
say, oh, God, okay.
All these smaller bites.
Not allowed to do that.
So you shouldn't be cutting all your food at once. It's kind of better manners.
Definitely not.
Eating before everyone has been served is a big no-no.
Mm-hmm.
It's polite to wait for everyone's food to arrive unless they say to you,
go ahead, it's going to get cold.
I had to recook my chicken, so go ahead. And then there are the conversations, the types of conversations you have around the table as well. Firstly, don't monopolize it. It should be more like a tennis match where two or more players are involved.
I love rules like that. Like you can make the boring, dull people at the table talk a little bit more, and you can tell the loud and obstreperous ones to talk a little less. I mean, these are things you would think people would be able to figure out how to have a conversation, even if they're not at the table. But people can't, clearly. So you need to be told.
Yeah. Then there's the other thing, of course, of bringing up controversial subjects.
Mm-hmm.
What are the things we don't speak about usually?
Politics,
religion, sex, and politics.
Yeah.
But
These days, I don't know anyone who doesn't talk about politics. Maybe not so much sex. You know, it's still kind of not necessarily good table conversation. Drinks, different story. and religion. Yeah, I mean, these are complicated things to get into, especially if you're at a table with
Absolutely.
people you don't know, right? You're invited to dinner parties. You're put next to somebody who you don't know very well. And your purpose there, I suppose, is to be as charming as you possibly can and avoid things that are going to make people upset or uncomfortable. So you got to be on your best behavior. Got to do that.
Yeah, it's kind of like now, a new one to add to that, I think, is talking about the COVID vaccine.
Oh.
Just don't bring that up.
Oh.
You know, if people have their own opinions.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And by the way, yeah. I mean, especially if, you know, you sit down and the first thing you notice is that person is sanitizing and they've got their mask on until the very moment they're going to put food into their mouth. Just, you know what you're dealing with there. So don't start ribbing them, because that's what I would do. I'd immediately start like rolling my eyes, but you can't do that. It's rude. You've got to supposedly behave.
Yeah. And it's almost as if a lot of people think they're coming from a place of caring, like, you know, when they're saying, why don't you sanitize or wear your mask? But the same goes for then pushing on religious beliefs.
Yeah.
You know, I need you to be Christian because you as my friend, I need to know that you're going to heaven when we die. You know
that.
What I mean?
I've heard that, yeah. I've heard that argument before. It's difficult to go there.
So this one I find a little bit controversial, because there are certain meals where you do want to use your bread to sop up lingering sauce.
Ooh, okay.
It's a bit of a no-no. But in a lot of cultures, that's how you eat the meal, where you may not even use a spoon or a fork, and you use the bread to eat.
Yeah.
I mean, so you've got to keep that in mind. I think if you think about certain Asian countries,
yeah,
in many of them, you actually leave a little bit of food on your plate to indicate that you're satisfied and no longer hungry. You know, and then we were brought up with, you eat everything because there are children in Ethiopia starving.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
Was what we were fed all every meal.
I always think it's good to leave something. If it looks like you've voraciously attacked your plate and there's nothing on it, it's always like a little bit, ooh, shame, that poor person. They were obviously desperately hungry. I mean, maybe we kept them waiting too long and haven't eaten for 3 days. Always leave something. That's what I do anyway. But here are a couple of comments here. I hate it when people start eating before the host or hostess takes their seat, says Ruth. Cheryl says, I turn into Jack the Ripper if I see someone eats or chews gum. Proof that gum's gone, it grinds my soul. Yeah. Well, poof, she says, that gum's gone, it grinds my soul. Also, Tracy says, using your cutlery to point at things while you're eating.
Oh, yes.
That's, not acceptable. Leaving the table before you're done eating. Oh, yes, like I'll judge you, she says. Yeah, people that fill their handbags or at business dinners. It's so disgusting, and they're in high political positions. Oh, yeah, the people who come with Tupperwares to a buffet. And they just shovel that stuff into a Tupperware and take it home. Unbelievable.
But many families are like that.
You
pitch up where there's a whole animal being bried on the spit or whatever. You bring your Tupperwares,
yeah.
You know?
Congo Chris says, is it acceptable, Leanne, to burp at the table? Different cultures have different answers.
Yeah, it's true. I don't know if it's an old wives' tale, but there are certain European cultures where apparently it's fine to burp. It shows that you're enjoying the food. I think it's frowned upon pretty much all over now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that it would go down very well if you suddenly went, of everyone at the table. Carl reminded me of this. This is funny. There's a scene in Curb Your Enthusiasm where they have to move Larry to the middle of the table so that he can make and steer an interesting conversation. And there's a name for it in the show. This is in the latest in the latest season. They're given a name. He's like, you got to be the middle guy, I think it is, or something like that. And the middle guy has to, like, move the conversation around the table. So if someone puts you in the middle of the table, that's your job. You know, so you put the more boring people on the corners. That's the idea.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because you usually put the most important people at the head, so that's a new way of doing things. But I suppose
Yeah, I'm not sure any of those rules still apply the way that they use. You know, again, some of this stuff is so old school, and maybe it doesn't matter if you eat on your lap in front of the TV anymore. It's maybe not the biggest problem. We've all done it, right? I'm sure the smartest people in the world sit sometimes in front of the TV eating takeaway, you know, stuff out of the packet. I'm sure they do when no one's looking. And they're all like, let's use the right cutlery when there are people around. Like, please, what are you trying to do?
I have a friend who refuses to eat pizza out of a box, or even if it's on a plate, she won't eat it with her hands. Same goes for a burger. She uses a knife and fork to cut them.
Yeah, but
whole thing is, because I'm a lady.
Well, I'm not a lady, but I do that. I mean, you've seen me eat a pizza. I use a knife and fork. I just don't like to just shovel it in. I mean, unless I'm on my own. But if I'm around people or I'm in a restaurant, I don't want to get my hands full of pizza or whatever. So you eat with your knife and fork.
Yeah.
If you're just wandering around.
Setting.
Yeah, and if you're just wandering around your house and it's like, you know, you had to order something because you hadn't cooked or you've got load shedding or whatever, then you make do. But, you know, generally, if I'm sitting down to eat, there'll be a knife and fork for those.
Mm.
All right. Couple of other comments here. And there are lots of people talking about this stuff, too. Three topics, that is a rule in my house, politics and religion, come and visit, and put your phone away. So I think that's an interesting point of view from Cheryl. See, the phone at the table is supposedly very, very rude. That's what they tell you.
Yeah, but that's actually on this etiquette expert's list, is talking or texting during a meal.
Okay.
You know, you might be able to sit down and say, I'm expecting an important phone call, so please excuse me if that happens. That's kind of what a person would do. But again, if you're in a family setting, I've actually started taking my phone to the table when we have our weekly family of four dinner,
mm-hmm.
Purely because a lot of our conversation directs to something that we've maybe seen online.
And
or
you have
to
look
to
it
check
up.
Something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that rule's starting to be bended a little bit. Bended.
Tracy says, I used to waitress as a student. I once served this tiny, frail little German lady Eisbein and a large pint of Bavarian lager. When I cleared her plate, she ripped the biggest burp. It was so funny at the time. Jawohl, mein. Lovely.
Little German lady.
Mm.
Oh, gosh. So another thing on the list is not drinking too much alcohol.
Oh, please. In South Africa, what chance do you have of that? I mean, look, maybe people won't get totally pissed at the dinner table, but you know what used to happen, and it still does, I think, largely at dinner parties. If you're not clearing away straight away to go somewhere else to carry on drinking, like another room or whatever, normally people sit around the table for a bit longer, and then they order some more, right? And then they drink some more. And then they get hammered.
Loose lips sink ships.
Oh, yeah, like that's valuable information in the 21st century. Whose ship are you sinking? What are you talking about? people get hammered. Have you not? I mean, this is South Africa. Binge drinking is like our team sport, right?
Yeah, but we tend to not be completely rat-faced while we're eating the meal. We, you know, people do kind of wait before they get to that stage. You don't want to end up passing out in your pea soup, you know?
No, but I mean, Dr. Robin says this is interesting. I have a mate who, after he's finished eating dinner too quickly, usually at a dinner party, will retire to the lounge and snooze on the couch while the rest of us keep on dinnering. My grandfather used to do that. Straight after like Christmas lunch, he'd go and lie down and have a little doo-doo.
I had an uncle who would do that. We would always find him under a tree in the garden on his back with his legs crossed, his arms behind his head.
Was he a drunkle or was he just having a snooze?
No.
He wasn't a drunkle.
No, just as soon as he'd eaten, that was him. He'd be up and go find a tree.
I went to...
But that's...
Yeah, go ahead.
That's one of the things on the list, eating too quickly. If you're a fast eater, learn to adjust your pace.
Yeah. Just watch for, you know, if you can see like you've just about finished your food and everybody else is only just starting, you've piled it in too fast. And listen, we say these things don't matter, and maybe they matter less these days, But unfortunately, when humans get together, they will judge each other on these things. And it can get you ahead, or it can help you to figure things out, to make relationships better than if you don't know this stuff. And we call them soft skills, but I tell you what, some people have made decisions to go into business with someone based on the way they pour a drink, or whether they put too much salt on their food, or, you know, I promise you this kind of thing has happened. And it's not the weirdest. Humans are bizarre, and these are the things. I think it might come from, again, from evolutionary history, from almost a social anthropological background, because eating together is something, you know, when people say break bread, you only really do that with people that you trust and love, because food was always in very short supply. So if you invited people to share your food, it was a high compliment. And if you're prepared to eat with those people and they don't show you due courtesy, it actually indicates a kind of disconnect and something that may jar with some deep reptile part of our brain. It's like, I'm inviting you to share food with me and you're letting me down. This is an insult, or it's a mistake I won't make again. And I really think that there is something to that. I mean, if I consider the kinds of friends who are friends that I would want to invite to my home for dinner, as opposed to the kind of friends who I don't mind meeting for a drink at a bar, they're very different. Mm. There is a slight, like, you know, disjunct between the two. So it's worth considering. I mean, whether or not you care about this stuff in some big way or not, I don't think anybody's being invited to, you know, 8-course dinners at embassies and palaces like they may be used to. I mean, these days everything is a lot more relaxed and informal, and I welcome that stuff. I don't think that that's a problem. But I do think, like, people have to consider this seriously. Any others before we get to headlines?
The salt one, we spoke about it recently, where some recruiters will judge you if you put salt on your meal before tasting it.
Yeah.
Because they think, you know, you don't know the facts and you're just presuming that it needs salt.
Right.
So that's an interesting one to remember.
I don't know that a CEO or the head of HR is going to take everyone out for lunch or dinner. But I have been out for lunch with a couple of really, really important CEOs, you know, where that's what they do, because they don't like having meetings in their office, and they're in charge of their own diary, and they like going out for a steak at lunchtime, you know? Somebody who runs a big mining house, for example. They'll say to you, come, join me for a steak. You'll go for a steak with this guy. And then you kind of have to just be on your best behavior. Not because you're trying to impress them or because you want business from them, because this is their environment. It's their thing that they do. So you want to make it better. Michael wants to know, and this is a good question, would you consider a braai more intimate than a dinner? You know, when I said just now that the kind of people who you'd invite to your house for something, would a braai, I think they're about the same in my book. I don't know that one is more intimate than the other. What do you think?
I mean, there's certain people that you may not, I was thinking, remember I mentioned the other day that I had dinner at Wilbur Smith's house.
Yes.
He's not the type of person I would have invited for a braai.
Oh, so you mean a braai, you know, a braai is less formal?
Yes, okay. I think so. All it's right. Something you're more likely to share with people that you know more intimately.
Okay. I don't have a reptile brain. That's the queen. I hope I'm not around when she ends her hibernation, says Corona's boring. Well, at 96, I don't know how many more humans she could eat. Michael says, I find that people I invited for a braai, I'd invite to dinner, but someone I'd invite to dinner, I wouldn't invite to a braai. Okay, I see what he means. All right, very good. Listen, we got to get to some headlines so we can pick this up a little bit later on. There are lots of interesting comments. Parallel Parking's got some things to say. There are lots of other stuff to talk about. But let me go into the headlines quickly so we can just make sure that we know what's going on in the world. So poor old Elon Musk, poor in inverted commas, because he lost 197 billion rand in one day. Yes. He spent Wednesday on Twitter announcing his political switch from Democrat to Republican. But He, meanwhile, lost value in Tesla. They sank to the lowest level this year, wiping $12.3 billion from his wealth, while Twitter further extended its slide. All told, Musk lost, are you ready for this? $49 billion, which is about 784 billion rand. Since launching his bid for Twitter last month, partly as the wider market tumbled and some of the investors in Tesla grew concerned over how he'd fund this offer for the social media giants. So, we all know inflation is rampant in America at the moment. We all know that the stock market is not really performing well. But the important thing here is, even if you lose 197 billion rand in a day like Elon Musk has, you don't panic. If you're in his position, you don't have to panic. He's 50 years old.
How much does he have?
Well, he's got a combined fortune of about $209 billion, which is 3.3 trillion rand, according to the Bloomberg Billionaires Index. And it goes up and it goes down. And you don't see him running for the hills because he's lost this money, because he's got so much. And he's smart. He knows eventually it's going to go up again. You know, if that was me or you, we would poo in our pants. We wouldn't know how to handle that.
I mean, I'd need to cry in the corner of the shower for a long time.
No, whole day. You just keep that geezer going. It's outrageous.
But I don't think he's the type of guy who, I don't know, a lot of people will shut me down now. I don't think he's that much into power as much as other people we know in the world.
Maybe not. Who knows?
If anything, this would give someone a very big head, knowing that that's the influence they have. That's something that they say,
also,
or if they change their political allegiance, everything falls apart.
I love the way, like, newspapers and in particular people who don't really understand money, and I include myself in that category a lot of the time, you throw around these numbers like you know what you're talking about, but the fact is that's not actual money in his bank. Those are shares that he has in a company, and the company is going to go like this. And you don't go and draw 100 billion rand. I mean, what ATM are you thinking that's going to come out of? You know, like, be sensible about this. That's money on paper, and it's money that's invested somewhere. It's not actualized, realized wealth. It's not cash out money at the casino after you've won, you know. We've got to change the way we think about these things, because when you read an article like that, you think, oh wow, that's a terrible loss. He's really put his foot in it. He must be stupid as hell. Meanwhile, it's just that his value in shares in unrealized wealth is that much money. And we didn't go and say, oh well, he made 147 billion rand today when it goes up. People don't – that's not how it works. Anyway, so poor old beleaguered KZN, I mentioned this, and I've been thinking about, you know, people I know in northern KZN especially. They've been hit by severe flooding once again. Multiple reports of damage, with a block of flats in Umhloti being evacuated after it started to collapse. Medic Response said, together with NSRI and police – search and rescue divers on the scene in that area, we safely evacuated a block of flats that was starting to collapse due to the current rain. One of the main entrances to the area is also partially collapsed. One motorist who drove past said, this is quite a serious situation. This is an entrance road to Umhloti, and it is looking quite bad here. I don't think this road is going to hold out for long. The water here is treacherous. It's unbelievable. Several other roads in the Durban area have also been flooded with collapsing banks. It's really bad. The weather service says it expects rains to continue this week. The service has increased its warning to red level 10, which is the highest adverse weather warning, and comes after rains caused destruction in the province last month, with more than 200 millimeters of rain expected over the coastline. Forecaster Jacqueline Modica said this may have a severe impact on communities that had not yet even recovered from the previous floods. It's horrible. And then Zweli Mkhize has said he's ready to stand for ANC president, the position of ANC president. I mean, you know, he's the former health minister. Of course, he's been He's been relegated to the sidelines for a while. The governing party's branches may nominate him for a position, according to him anyway. Comes as the ANC gears for national elective conferences in December this year. Addressing a group of Amabuto, those are the traditional leaders, and Izinduna, they attended a traditional wedding of his son. The former minister said he'll do whatever he's requested to do by the ANC structures. You know, because you can't be ambitious in the ANC. But if you're not ambitious, then no one's going to elect you. So you have to play this stupid game where you pretend you're there to serve the party. Such childish nonsense. Anyway, Zweli Mkhize, of course, has largely made a complete fool of himself with that whole digital vibes thing, even though the ANC themselves cleared him of any kind of wrongdoing. It's just so dumb. I mean, does anyone want President Zweli Mkhize? Not I. So we could, it's just dumb. It's dumb, dumb, dumb. These people are just ridiculous in the ANC, and they think that we're all as dumb as they are. Apparently, according to this is the BBC, what could you be eating? I love when these dumb news sites, again, dumb. I'm using that word a lot this morning because we've got Zweli Mkhize and then these guys in one fell swoop. But, you know, they keep telling us that we can't eat meat. We must change to a vegan diet. We should eat bugs. We should eat slugs. We should eat all this gross stuff. And nobody wants to, right? Now the BBC's published this article. In the future, you could be breakfasting on false banana or snacking on the pandanus tree fruit. With 90% of calories coming from just 15 crops, people are hunting for ingredients to future-proof our diets. Climate change is increasing the risk of severe food shocks where crops fail and the prices of staple foods rise rapidly around the world. Diversifying the food we eat is one of the solutions, says a researcher called Dr. Sam Perinon. Now, Dr. Sam Perinon can do whatever the hell they want. I don't know if it's a male or a female, but don't tell me to eat this nonsense.
No, this banana thing is a thing, though.
Oh, please.
I've read about it, so it must be true.
Yeah?
But no, apparently the bananas that we know as bananas today will not exist in the near future.
Okay.
The actual species will change, and they'll look different and taste different.
Well, inset or false banana is a close relative of the banana, but is consumed only in one part of Ethiopia. It's a banana-like fruit, and a lot of it is inedible, but the starchy stems and roots can be fermented to make porridge and bread. Oh, you guys have such a way of making me so hungry for this stuff. You know, whoever writes these articles clearly wants us to be as miserable as possible. So they talk about this pandanus fruit, which grows in the Philippines. Apparently, it's a pineapple-like fruit, can be eaten raw or cooked. I mean, I'll try it, but I'm going to change my whole diet to this. Beans, they want us to eat much more in the way of beans and legumes. Wild cereals, they say we've got to eat more of that. And then they've got this picture of this. It almost just looks like flour in a bowl. Excuse me?
Who wants Indian cuisine?
I think Siri just asked me if I want to go to like North Indian cuisine somewhere. Anyway, this looks horrible. It's like a dry powder, and people are like, oh, this is going to be great, you know, all these climate change people.
Superfood.
Got to eat that. I don't want any of this stuff. I'm quite happy, thank you. And all that we're going to have to do is pay more for the stuff, so get ready for that. But
yeah, that's the thing.
It's
eat
just
more,
unbelievable.
Eat more cauliflower, they say, and then it goes through the roof in price.
All right, we've got lots of exciting stuff to get to this morning, but I want to talk to Dr. Hanan, and we're going to speak to Aspasia, who we haven't spoken to in ages, Aspasia Karas, who is also part of the Cliff Central family for some time. What we want to do here is discuss something which I think strikes at the heart of so many people's relationships. Aspasia wrote this great article on Albert and Charlene of Monaco, and they've got some kind of a deal, apparently. You know, I always wonder how these stories leak. And it's the title of her article is Albert and Charlene's Deal Proves There's No Romance Without Finance. And I wonder how many people believe that, first of all. And second of all, how many people are actually in a position to deal with finances in a way that it makes the relationship better. I mean, you need to have considerable resources in some cases. Not everybody is a Prince of Monaco who can give their wife 169 million rand per year to stay in a miserable marriage. But I think it would be interesting to hear from Dr. Hanan about this. And we'll be joined by Aspasia in just a moment or two. So how are you, Doc? Nice to see you.
Nice to see you guys. How are you?
Cool. This is not a new subject, and it's actually something you've even brought up before. So many relationships break down because of financial problems, financial constraints. Not always the lack of money, but perhaps a lack of honesty and communication about money. So it's not as if we haven't touched on this before. And I know you've read Aspasia's article as well. We'll get to the situation in that particular story in just a moment. But am I right to say that it isn't about how much money you have? It's about how you and your spouse, your partner, communicate about money and how you deal with each other.
Yeah, for sure. That's exactly right, Gareth. Money is just a resource and a medium, and it's part of the rules of the game, and it's got nothing to do with the amount of money. Couples get divorced when they have billions, and couples get divorced when they have almost nothing. Mm-hmm. Couples make it happen when they have billions, and couples can make it happen when they have almost nothing. It's about negotiating how we're going to utilize and use the resources in the marriage effectively, because all a marriage is, as any other relationship, is just a game. Okay. And in order to play the game well together, we got to discuss the rules of the game. And when the rules are unclear or unrealistic, then natural conflict comes up. So with money, it's just another medium in which we play the game with. And you got to discuss it quite clearly. What are my responsibilities? What are yours? How are we going to use this resource? Just like we would use any other resource or any other part of the game.
Well, here's a statement from Dogozo, which I think will get us on the right argument track here. He says, there cannot be romance without finance. Finance is the single most important thing in a relationship. Do you think that's right?
You know, the single most important thing in the relationship that is the thing that's not working. So, you know, they say, when intimacy works in a relationship, it counts for 10%. When it doesn't work, it counts for 90%. Uh-huh. When finance works for the relationship, it counts for 10%. When it doesn't work, it counts for 90%. Mm. So suddenly when there's an element of the relationship that doesn't work, that's the single most important thing. Imagine, I'll give you an analogy, driving your car.
Yeah.
And suddenly there's a flat tire. 99.9% of the car might be functioning incredibly well, but that one tire is just messing everything up. And in that moment, that is the most important thing in your drive. That is the most important thing in your journey. So, you know, there's a couple of fundamentals for any relationship, and you've got to make sure that everything is not perfect, but certainly functional, so it doesn't make it the whole problem. So the single most important thing in a relationship is the thing that doesn't work.
That makes a lot of sense. I like your analogy of the car.
Yeah, hugely. But I think I might have not had failed relationships if I thought of it that way.
No, there's many elements to a relationship, and you've got to make sure that all of them are functional, not perfect, functional, so that it doesn't break down and break down the whole car.
All right, so there are a lot of other questions that are coming up in my mind here, but let's just talk about your experience in practice. I mean, you've got so many clients, and I'm sure many of them have got massive relationship problems. What would you say is the single biggest reason for those relationships to fail? And if it's finance, I'm not saying it is, but if it is, what aspect of that can be the most dangerous? Like, is it not being open and honest about the money? Is it about being maybe too schnorre if you're the one person in the relationship, or maybe being too frugal if you're the other person? Like, how does it break down actually in your experience, and having seen so many people over the years who've tried to keep it together or just decided it's not worth trying to keep it together?
Yeah. So look, as I said, there are many different aspects to make a relationship work, and finance is just one of them. Mm. And there's no one main reason why a couple would naturally break up because of a finance issue. Finances are just a one stress. Kids could break up the marriage. A lack of practical contribution that can break up the marriage. Lack of communication can break up the marriage. I'm going to be quite boring here, but the number one reason why couples don't make it is because of the lack of compromise and communication. Mm-hmm. Those are the two most important things. And I've said this before and I'll say it again. When I see a couple and they come here and it's one of the partners say, it's my way or the highway. This is the only way that I'm prepared to make this work. Otherwise, I'm out of here. That's when I stop seeing them. Because without compromise, there's no negotiation. And a relationship is really all about, well, where are we going to meet to make this work in the next 40 years? Where are we going to meet mm-hmm. in this spot in order to make it for the next 40 years? And that requires sacrifice. And if couples are not able to sacrifice, unable to get creative, and as I said before, it's sometimes not even 50-50, sometimes 80-20 your side, sometimes 100-0 my side.
Right.
So, but you've got to be able to negotiate. But communication is the most important thing. But to your point with regards to money, you've got to discuss the rules of the game. You've got to discuss the rules of the game. And how do you know that the rules of the game have not been discussed effectively or efficiently enough when conflict comes up?
Mm.
So, you know, I'll use the analogy of a car again. How do you know something is broken? Well, when there's a warning sign or the red light comes up on the dashboard. A warning sign or the red light coming up in your relationship is when there's natural conflict. So conflict is a message that something is off in the relationship. Don't ignore it. Because just like a car, if you ignore the red light, it doesn't go away. But we hope that it goes away by itself.
Yeah.
But it just never does. It doesn't go away by itself. The problem gets worse and worse. And in a relationship, it's exactly the same thing. If there's natural conflict, yeah, you might cover it up with intimacy, and you might cover it up with date night, and you might cover it up with, you know, let's forget about it and sweep it under the carpet with a glass of wine. But you don't actually fix it. Carl, so you've got to be able to kind of dive in and fix it.
Carl says, you know, Hanan is quite uncompromising on this compromise thing.
I am non-negotiable. There's certain fundamentals that just can't be there. You know, I'll use the analogy again of a car. Many things, the car, the radio is negotiable. The aircon is negotiable. The seat warmers are negotiable. But the tires are just not negotiable. You can have 75% of the tires there, which is quite good, but it's just not enough to make the car go. And there's certain fundamentals of the relationship that just have to be there.
All right, so let's look at this particular situation. We're trying to get Aspas here, but I don't know whether she's not connected or there's something going on. But her article's really well written, and she kind of, you know, with tongue firmly in cheek, she says, the princess obviously felt her deal warranted some renegotiation, so she took her sweet time considering the entire enterprise. She was obviously wavering after making a break for it, but something had to give. She had been incentivized to continue performing at a level that would maintain the idea that we're watching some kind of fairy tale Disney romance, as opposed to the tired machinations of royal figureheads trotting out the illusion of grandeur for the little people. As a certain hip-hop artist put it pithily, there can be no romance without finance. So let's just take a look at this very unique situation. You've got a very wealthy prince of a tax haven in Europe who's effectively paying his wife just to keep up appearances. And she's obviously agreed to this. It's a contract, right? Let's not be silly about this. There are no feelings involved here. If it gets to that stage, that is a business relationship. You do X, I pay you for Y.
Yeah, but you know what? Gareth, you know my feelings about feelings, right?
Yeah.
You should never. You know, the thing is, talking about relationship, I always tell people, and it's so unromantic, but this is the truth. You should never fall in love with your heart. You should fall in love with your head. Your heart is a random thing that sometimes likes it, sometimes doesn't like it. And generally people like things that are familiar to them. And I used the analogy before, and I'll use it again. Take the idea of an abused girl, maybe physically, emotionally, sexually. She will naturally grow up, naturally and organically grow up to and be attracted to somebody that represents exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
Not because she loves him, but because it's familiar. Mm. We naturally fall for people that are familiar to us because familiarity equals safe. So for that particular, in this particular example, she will naturally fall in love, feelings, for somebody that's wrong for her.
Yeah.
And if you give her the right guy, she will naturally not feel for him. Yeah. So if you are guided by your feelings, you're naturally not going to go for what's necessarily right. You will go for what's safe. So you should never be guided by your feelings. You should be guided by your head. Now, then people say, but Hanan, isn't a relationship all about feelings? Well, the truth is, feelings will always follow if the boxes are ticked. So if there's trust, mm-hmm. if there's communication, mm-hmm. if there's intimacy, if there's attraction, if there's compromise, if there's common and shared values, the more you dive yourself into that kind of relationship, the safer you feel, and then the feelings can come up. So yes, feelings are important, but they are secondary to ticking all the boxes and making sure that all the ties are there.
I think a lot of people are going to be listening to that going, oh, I don't know if I agree, Dr. Hanan, but you're right. I mean, it makes sense, and that's why in this case, I suppose, it is a business relationship, and if it's working for Charlene, at least to the point where she's making a ton of money and she just has to appear on the balcony every now and then and wave, then at least the rules of the game, which you mentioned earlier, are established at the beginning.
The rules of the game are established. And I'm not saying that you should not feel for the other person, but make sure that the box that takes it, it can't work the other way around. You can't have feelings for somebody and then there are no ties in this car. It's just you're going nowhere. You've got to have the ties first and then fall in love with the car.
So then, I mean, we can have a moral discussion about whether it's right or wrong. And in South Africa, there are lots of older men who have money, who have much younger girlfriends. We call them blessers and blessees, right? We can't really fault that if we're not in it, because maybe the girl is getting exactly what she wants in terms of stuff is paid for, there's money in the bank, that's all she's really in it for. The guy's getting what he wants, he gets to have an attractive young girl around him, he gets to have maybe the sex, he gets to have the exciting life, he gets to have the energy of someone who's probably, you know, above his pay grade in terms of looks or age or anything else, but essentially he's paying for that company, and that's how it works. Yeah. And as cold and perhaps in some people's opinion, and immoral as it may be, that's the relationship. That's the business.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They each put each other in the right box, and that's how they treat each other. You know, the biggest thing that I see in my practice in terms of conflict is when people put other people in the wrong box. So in other words, they see a person in a particular way, but they treat them differently. And I'll give you a quick example. I had a patient, she found out her boyfriend cheated on her of 8 years, and she sits in my office, she says to me, Hanan, I just want to go out and I just want to mess around. I just want to have playful, superficial sexual relationships with other men. I've never had that in my life. That's what I want to experience. Cool. She meets a guy and they have incredible attraction towards one another. And that's what happens. And on the second date, he turns to her and he says to her, so tell me a little bit about your family. And she goes, no, that's not our relationship. And I said to her, good for you. She put him in the right box. He tried to escape, and she put him right back in the box. Because that way she would never get hurt. Their relationship was nothing but physical. The moment you wanted it to be more than just physical, if she had let him out the box, she would naturally get hurt because that's not what she wanted. He didn't represent that to her. So she put him back in the box, and that's where – and by the way, in that moment, he has a choice. He can go, well, okay, I accept the deal. I accept the contract, or I don't accept the contract. But at least it's an honest relationship, and nobody's going to get hurt. So be very forthright with what you want out of the relationship.
Well, there's going to be a lot of controversy around this. I'm sure there are going to be people who say, oh, well, you know, if that's the way that she's going to behave, then she deserves to get hurt anyway. And, you know, some people will say it's right, it's wrong. You don't know unless it's you in there. But I love it. This is why we have this discussion with you. So thank you, Doc. Nice to see you.
Pleasure, guys. Nice to see you guys. Be well.
Very good. There's Dr. Hanan Bushkin. Interesting discussion. And we couldn't get hold of Aspasia, but man, what an interesting article too.
But what he's just said now rings so true for one of my experiences before. I was at that place that woman that he described is at. Mm-hmm. And I remember meeting someone and he said he was kind of leaning towards wanting to be in a relationship. Mm-hmm. And I said to him, we can either have sex or we can be friends. Those are your two options.
Wow.
And for such a long time, I felt bad about that. But now I'm thinking it was actually a really good decision. I put him in his box.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, none of this is cut and dried. Every situation has its own internal dynamics. But I do love that example. And I love that that woman said, oh, no. You don't get to ask me about my family. That's not where you're involved. So very interesting stuff, and certainly a lot to chew on this Monday morning. We'll be back in a moment or two with a whole lot more. Stick around. CliffCentral.com, including Collectomania, coming up next. CliffCentral.com.